yesterday that Mr. Eklund may have understated what their demand is, but based on what we've been provided in the RI cost studies, five would be able to handle it with an OC-12, and one would require an OC-48.
So if I understand it, and I'm going to approach it from what I see as kind of a simple way or a simple explanation is, if you're going to say, I need this much demand, then the FLEC analysis requires you to show your future, the future demand that requires you to build that kind of capacity.
Yes. And requires projected demand.
Okay. If you're going to, I'm sorry.
Requires projected demand.
But if you're going to say that the demand for the transport is only the 2006 demand, then you can't justify using an OC-192 network under the FLEC analysis.
That would be correct.
The you talked about, I believe, the Virginia arbitration order, the FCC Cost Bureau. And I read that order, and they refer to the switch as a getting started cost. What do you understand a getting started cost is?
I'm going to object. It's beyond the scope of cross-examination.
I thought that you guys did discuss the, yeah. He discussed the FCC rule. He discussed the FCC's situation with respect to a question about you when you talked about the FCC rules.
I think that's a fair statement, but we weren't addressing it in concepts of the switch getting started costs.
Overall.
Well, getting started costs refers to a portion of the total switch investment, and simply it is the investment in those components that are necessary to establish the switch. So typically it will include the processor, memory, and other kinds of investment that you have to get started. And those, the FCC Common Carrier Bureau concluded, were fixed costs, not usage sensitive. They are comparable to what are considered common switch investments in this case.
That's all I have.
Any further costs?
Nothing further, Ms. Weiss. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Make sure you leave the tabbed exhibits up there. So.
Testimony you're about to give will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. So help you God.
I do.
Mr. Williams, can you state your full name and where you work, your business address?
Ronald L. Williams. I work at Alltel Communications. My business address is 3650 131st Avenue. Southeast, in Bellevue, Washington.
Okay, and what do you do?
My title is Vice President of Interconnect for Alltel Communications. In that capacity, I'm responsible for our relationships with all the carriers for which we exchange traffic from our network, from to and from our network.
Okay. What's your professional background?
I have about 20 years in the telecommunications industry, initially with a large local exchange carrier at that time called DTE. After about 10 years with that company. I moved into a startup CLEC operation. Worked in CLEC operations for about 4 years, the latter part of which brought me to a company called Western Wireless. We disposed of our CLEC operations in about 2002. Since that time, I've been involved in carrier relations, first with Western Wireless and more recently with Altel.
And in your capacity with Altel, were you involved in trying to negotiate the interconnection agreement here?
Yes, in this case I was directly involved in the negotiations for this interconnection agreement. Okay.
And have you had the opportunity to file testimony in this proceeding?
I have. I filed direct and rebuttal testimony.
And I want to just make sure I've got these numbers correct. And I'm showing you what's been marked as Altel Confidential Exhibit 5, which is a summary of your testimony. Altel Confidential 6, which appears to be titled your direct testimony filed in this matter, and Altel 7, Confidential, which is your rebuttal testimony. Is that correct?
That's correct.
That's the 6 and 7. Encapsulate the entirety of your testimony pre-filed here.
That's correct. We'll have exhibits filed in conjunction with the testimony attached.
Yes, and again, for the commission's knowledge, I'll just file a confidential set. Again, the public is available online. In preparing today, were there any changes or corrections you saw necessary in that testimony?
No.
Would you be, could you please provide the commission a summary of, well, first let me ask this, what issues does your testimony concern? Because there are a number of issues involved in this arbitration.
To put it simply, my testimony concerns all the issues except reciprocal compensation or transport and termination cost in this. And that includes issues for the inter-MTA factor, the rate applicable to inter-MTA traffic, whether factor billing would be appropriate for reciprocal compensation traffic, what the traffic factor would be for reciprocal compensation traffic, what the definition of MTA would be appropriate for this agreement, and issues involving direct connection and the point of interconnection. Now, not all of these issues are open with respect to all five of these carriers, but and I'll address the differences as we go through testimony.
Okay. So Mr. Williams, also in front of you, marked as, I believe, Exhibit 5, was a summary of testimony of Mr. Williams. Can you describe what that is?
Yes, this was pre-filed last Wednesday with the commission, and it is a summary, an extract, if you will, of components of my direct and rebuttal testimonies.
And it also condenses down some of the opposing language the parties want?
That's correct on a couple of the issues.
I'd move for the admission of 5, 6, and 7. Altel 5, 6, and 7.
Any objections? Petitioners have no objection to Exhibits 5 and 6 with respect to Exhibit 7 for purposes of my preserving my record on the portions of testimony of Mr. Williams that I previously asked be excluded. We would object to that. I understand the Commission's already denied that and will do so again. I just want to make clear on the record that I would object to the inclusion of that portion of the testimony.
Okay. The objection is overruled. Exhibits 5, 6, and 7 are admitted.
All right. With Mr. Williams, now, could you provide the Commission, again, let me back up. So your testimony today, so the Commission put in context of the testimony that's gone before you, would address issues raised by Mr. Davis and Mr. Thompson, correct?
That's correct.
Would it address any issues raised by Mr. Eklund, Ms. Vanacek, or Mr. Weber?
It would not be his intent.
Okay. Can you provide the commission a summary of your testimony?
Certainly, and I think the best way to go through this is to use Confidential Exhibit 5 summary, as it takes it on an issue-by-issue basis. It's been a couple days since we heard Mr. Davis first speak about some of these issues, so some reorientation might be appropriate. The first issue, which is...
I'm sorry to interrupt. You'll have to let us know. Are you actually going to be talking about anything confidential? It's marked confidential.
I'm going to... Since I'm going to try to avoid specific references
okay.
to the numbers and state how they were derived.
If you need to, that's fine. Just let us know.
The first issue that I'm addressing is issue 2, the inter-MTA factor. And you do have a confidential summary in front of you describes, summarizes my testimony on that. You know from the testimony you've heard from Mr. Thompson and Mr. Davis that Alltel has chosen to proffer a point of interconnection based study of inter-MTA traffic exchange. That method, the point of interconnection method, is the FCC method that's recognized by the FCC. It's a method that's easily derived with information accessible to both parties. And in fact, you heard today that petitioners would concur that's an easy method. And it is also the best method for determining cost causation with respect to inter-MTA traffic because it deals with the point on a carrier's network where that traffic is handed off as opposed to some other indicator of some arbitrary indicator of where that traffic may or may not be handed off. So it actually says, here's where the traffic is. Do you have to carry that traffic across an MTA boundary or not? And if so, it accomplishes a factor based on that. That is, at the time that the FCC developed the first report and order, they recognized that simplicity in terms of development of traffic factors was critical to advance competition. And that's why they've offered this method as an alternative to all other more sophisticated but also more laborious methods to derive inter-MTA factor. The Alltel study is, as we heard earlier today from Mr. Thompson, is based on NPA and XX, or telephone number method. There's no specific basis for that in any of the FCC rules or even within the first report and order. There are known issues with that, as there are with almost any inter-MTA study, but the issues that are specific and germane to South Dakota have to do with the fact that an NPA NXX study fails to account for ported numbers. There's a substantial amount of wireless ported number activity in South Dakota. It fails to account for type 1 numbers because type 1 numbers don't show up on assignments to the carrier that actually controls those numbers. And in the case of the petitioner's study, it also excluded roaming traffic from roamers on our network that were beyond the 3 or 4 MTAs that were considered. But again, like any study, it has shortcomings. And those shortcomings are specific to environmental conditions, not only on a statewide basis, but also on an individual carrier basis. The RLAC studies, nevertheless, and even though we endorse the point of interconnection method, largely for its simplicity, I took the opportunity in my rebuttal testimony to review the petitioner's NPNXX study and to adjust for what were the known changes in how traffic flowed since 2004. For that, I used the data that was available to us from the petitioners. It was obtained in detail through discovery, and there was sufficient detail to make NPNXX-based adjustments. And that's what I did. Those adjustments accounted for a divestiture that occurred when Alltel acquired Western Wireless that required divestiture of Western Wireless Nebraska operations. Similarly, and subsequent to the Western Wireless acquisition, Alltel acquired Midwest Wireless in Minnesota. That precipitated a divestiture of Western Wireless's southern Minnesota operations. And that would have been in the 2006 time frame. The Alltel acquisition of Western Wireless was in August of 2005, and that's when the Nebraska operations were divested. Alltel has implemented routing changes in both its Sioux Falls and Rapid City switches over the last 4 years, and those have been included in my adjustments. And finally, Alltel switches in Colorado and Montana, though initially included in a 2004 study, have always switched traffic via an IXC for delivery to South Dakota telcos. And so what you see below in the table is a summary of those adjustments to including a comparison of the study results from the different studies. The first column by carrier indicates the results I provided based on a point of interconnection study or the POI study. I happened to use 2005 data because actually it had been a study that had been done earlier. If I use current data, the numbers for Beresford, Kennebec, McCook, Sandhill, and West River wouldn't change. The numbers for Alliance would change. Again, that's because of of how a point of interconnection method is applied. The NPNXX study conducted by Mr. Thompson in 2004, you can see the numbers there. You can also see next in the middle column the NPNXX study that reflects Mr. Thompson's numbers, adjusted for the changes in Alltel's network subsequent to 2004. And finally, the next column, estimated land to mobile inter-MTA traffic, is a derived figure. It's not based on data produced by Mr. Thompson, but it's based upon the balance of traffic relationship between the carriers. And that balance of traffic for all traffic has been applied to the adjusted study to create a estimate of land to mobile inter-MTA. For example, for McCook, if they had a number, and I'll try not to be confidential here, so I'm just going to describe it. If their NPNXX study adjusted number was a certain percentage, and the overall balance of traffic between McCook and Alltel was, for example, 75% mobile to land, 25% land to mobile, I applied those ratios to derive the percentage that is in the column estimated land to mobile inter MTA. And then finally, the right hand column is the netting or the net inter MTA factor. The mobile to land inter MTA factor that is in the adjusted study minus the land to mobile inter MTA factor to come up with a net inter MTA factor. So that's the testimony I have and derivations I have used in that testimony for proffering Alltel's position on inter-MTA. next issue deals with the inter-MTA rate. And this is the compensation rate that would be applied to inter-MTA traffic. This summary is not a mathematical summary. It's more of a policy summary. There are no FCC rules that impose rate requirements for inter-MTA traffic in an interconnection agreement. In fact, there are no FCC rules at all that speak to inter-MTA. There's a phrase in the first report and order that references inter-MTA compensation. That's extent. There's a lot of leeway in this issue, and that's why negotiated results are the standard in the industry. There's no basis to charge rates in an intrastate tariff for, and particularly the LECA tariff, for inter-MTA traffic. There are no terms in the LECA tariff that describe the service that is inter-MTA service here. Inter-MTA service is not feature group A, not feature group B, not feature group C, not feature group D, and not operator services traffic. Those are the only services in the LECA tariff. So, finally, there's another issue with the LECA tariff. Even if you were to consider that the LECA tariff could be applicable to inter-MTA traffic, the LECA tariff is problematic for this reason. It currently has in it a bundled rate that includes a range of elements and assumes a traffic delivery path that is not how inter-MTA traffic is delivered by Alltel to the petitioners. The record rate assumes traffic is delivered on a centralized equal access basis to a centralized equal access tandem and operated by SDN in Sioux Falls, South Dakota. None of the inter-MTA traffic at issue in this case is delivered to that tandem. If it was, it would be IXC routed traffic, and that isn't part of this case. Both parties are in agreement on that. Inter-MTA traffic that is part of this case is delivered directly to these LEX networks at their LEX network. So, for example, there is a LECA rate that assumes a CEA tandem delivery of traffic that terminates to West River, 200 plus miles away from that tandem. Alltel delivers traffic directly to West River service area. So there's not 200 miles of transport involved in Western Wireless, Alltel's delivery of inter-MTA traffic. And there's no way in the current construct of the LECA tariff to separate out the different elements in that tariff. There was, in the prior LECA tariff, separate categories for switching, transport, carrier common line. Those aren't available today. Again, even if you were to assume that inter-MTA traffic was associated with one of the services that is named in that tariff. And finally, the rate of the tariff also includes a subsidy for local loop carrier common line charge, which is not a FCC-recognized charge. And although the FCC indicated that CMRS, wireless inter-MTA traffic, could be subject to access charges, it did not forfeit or concede its ability and its authority over CMRS traffic. So they retain their authority, and part of what the FCC recognizes as their authority is that carrier common line in the federal regime is cannot be charged to carriers because it is an implicit subsidy or a direct subsidy for services that aren't used for transport or termination, whether that be access or anything else. So my recommendation is on NRMGA rate that interstate access rate elements, which are broken down by component, transport, tandem switching, termination, would be applied as they are actually incurred for any inter-MTA traffic exchanged between the carriers. So that's the inter-MTA rate issue. The next issue, issue three, has to do with the balance of traffic between the carriers. And what this diagram, I don't know if yours is in color or not, but what this diagram is intended to represent is how traffic flows between petitioners and Alltel for intra-MTA traffic. And this is the traffic, again, that's subject to reciprocal compensation. And if you can follow me, I'm going to talk about three different paths that traffic can take when it originates from a petitioner and is terminated to Alltel Wireless within the same MTA. Let's start with path A because it's the easiest. A call is initiated by a petitioner subscriber, and that call is delivered to Alltel switch over a direct interconnection that connects Alltel's network with the petitioner's network. And that's condition A. And generally, that traffic is easy for everybody to measure. Condition B is known as indirect routing. And that condition is also common here in South Dakota and is also commonly used by both parties, although it's used differently by both parties. In this case, and this is path B, in this case, Alltel may have a number in a local calling area of a rural LEC. If that number is in the local calling area and say it's with a Quest exchange that is in an EAS calling area, for example, the way we are receiving traffic today for those numbers is that the LEC initiates the call, hands that call to Quest via that EAS route, and Quest will terminate that call to us via our connection at their tandem. And so that's path B. And that occurs for all of, in some level, for all of the LECs, with the exception of Kennebec, because Alltel has no numbers that are local to Kennebec's calling area. And finally, path C is the situation where traffic, this is intra-MTA traffic, is routed to Alltel via an internet exchange carrier. In other words, the LEC customer dialed a toll call, 1+10 digits, to an Alltel number. That call was handed off to an internet exchange carrier. The internet exchange carrier would deliver that then to an RBOC tandem, Quest tandem in this case. Quest would deliver that traffic then to Alltel's point of interconnection with the Quest tandem. That's traffic flow C. You can see, also looking at the diagram, you can see coming out of the tandem in this case, traffic is combined in its delivery to Alltel for B and C paths. So it comes over on a common trunk group to us. That's the way traffic flows, and pretty much the opposite of what I described on a mobile to land direction flows as well. If you turn to the next slide, which is another word and chart slide, of a clear issue on balance of traffic. Altel has proposed that the agreement contain language that supports the use of a traffic factor to enable Altel to bill reciprocal compensation traffic. The parties have already agreed that the scope of traffic is intra-MTA. That's already in the agreement. But the issue with that is that there is today, and never has been, a way for Altel to capture the billable data for all of the intra-MTA traffic, and particularly that traffic that is delivered via an inter-exchange carrier, and that was, as referenced here, Route C on the diagram. And the reason for that is because when traffic is handed off to an inter-exchange carrier, and that inter-exchange carrier then delivers it to the tandem operator, tandem operator's call records indicate that the inter-exchange carrier is the originating carrier for that traffic. And so by the time that gets to Altel and Altel's billing system, it doesn't show as having originated from the actual intra-MTA traffic originator, in this case, the petitioner. So we can't bill for it. Even if we were to buy call records from the tandem operator, those call records in a carrier access billing system don't support billing for that traffic that's routed in that fashion. So in order for Altel to be wholly compensated for intra-MTA traffic, Altel is proposing that a factor method be applied that enables that. prior agreements with these same petitioners included traffic factors. It's my understanding that these same petitioners have other agreements in place today that are using factor-based billing. It's a common method that's used throughout the industry. And in this case, Altel is the only party to have provided a traffic exchange or traffic ratio, traffic exchange ratio in the case. The numbers that we provided are noted here for your reference. And is the only two carriers where this is an issue with are McCook and Santel. We've resolved this matter with the other petitioners. The next issue, issues 4 and 5, as Mr. Davis explained, have been resolved between the parties and don't merit further discussion here. Issue 6 is still an open issue between the parties, and it's a fairly simple issue. It just has to do with what language is appropriate for the definition associated with MTA in the agreement. In fact, neither party has offered up a traffic study that is consistent with the language proposed by the petitioners for the agreement. The RLX provided an MPA and XX study. Altel provided a point of interconnection study. Neither study equates to the language, to the specific language that the petitioners would have us use to define MTA in this agreement. In fact, Altel's definition is a simple definition of MTA. And what the petitioners are proposing is adding additional language to that to specify that that the MTA is defined by a cell site and an in-office location. Again, the studies for which you're being asked to decide on a factor for do not use that method of determining whether a call is inter or intra-MTA. So all Altel is proposing is, for two reasons, simple language tied to a simple language elsewhere in the agreement that it merely specifies this is the factor the parties have agreed to for inter-MTA billing, and this is the rate applied to that factor. There's no need for additional language that may be misleading and may be inconsistent with how factors were actually developed for this agreement. And I will note that there is no provision in this agreement for restudying the factors. The parties have agreed to language to establish a factor and to maintain that factor for the duration of the agreement, largely because of the, and that has been a negotiated settlement, largely because of the known hassles of trying to redo a study periodically over the term of an agreement. So that's issue six, fairly simple and straightforward. Finally, issue seven, direct connect, point of interconnection. This is kind of a bit of a blended issue. But let me describe the diagram on the right. The big shaded area is intended to represent a REC service area. And within that, there are rectangles that are intended to represent REC switches. And we've heard all about the transport that connects those switches together, and those are the little black lines on this diagram. And this is a hypothetical diagram. It doesn't relate to any one of the petitioners in particular. But also in the local exchange, in the LEC's service territory, the LEC has points of interconnection with different carriers. Some might be points of interconnection with wireless carriers. All of the petitioners have points of interconnection with Qwest, and all of the petitioners have points of interconnection with SDN. Finally, and at the bottom of that chart, shows a little spur that sticks out of the traditional service area of the LEC. And in some cases, LECs may establish a point of interconnection that is outside their traditional service area. And they do this for a number of different reasons, and which are really irrelevant here. But nevertheless, they've established a point of interconnection with another carrier that is outside the LEC's traditional service area. Basically, looking at this diagram, what Alltel is asking for is the ability, if Alltel chooses, to establish a direct interconnection at any one of the locations identified on this diagram, either at the switch or at an existing point of interconnection with one of these carriers. That right is granted to competitive carriers through the Telecom Act. Sections 2011, which preceded the Act, grants the right to establish a direct interconnection. Section 251, C2, subsections B and C also grant that right. And that right basically is to be able to connect at a technically feasible location on the RLEC network. And in fact, there are many more technically feasible locations on RLEC network than are shown here, and many more than Alltel would be requesting. We've simplified it and said, give us a connection, give us a right to connect at where you're already connected with some other carrier or at one of your switching locations. The parties have already agreed in this, and negotiated an agreement on the financial responsibility to get to that point of interconnection. And finally, Alltel had made the offer to, if it chose to establish a direct interconnection, make that a two-way interconnection. Alltel has the right to establish a one-way interconnection for traffic terminating to the LECs, according to the Act. What Alltel offered was to make each and every one of those a two-way connection, with the expectation that that would alleviate these telephone companies' issues concerning land and mobile routing of traffic, including the issues that they raise in another docket having to do with ported, routing of ported numbers. Altel has conceded, I have conceded in my testimony, that if a two-way connection is not interesting to these petitioners, then Altel certainly would not require that. So the recommendation on this is basically to allow Altel to establish points of interconnection at any of the LEC switches or at any existing point of interconnection they may have with some other carrier. And that's that issue. And that is a summary of my testimony.
Make them available for cross-examination.
Ms. Moore?
Thank you, Ms. Waste. Mr. Williams, we've spent a fair amount of time talking about the PORTA methodology with regard to the measurement of inter-MTA traffic. If I understand your testimony correctly, what you're indicating is that the PORTA method is the best way to determine the location of the wireless caller, correct?
No, the PORTA method is the least costly, most easily implemented method, and in addition, it has the benefit of being the best method for cost causation.
Okay. Let me ask you this then, because the PORTA methodology does look at the location of the wireless caller as far as how it's designed. So is it your belief then that there's no possibility that a wireless caller is going to be in a different MTA, that there will never be a call originating outside of an MTA?
My understanding of the, I think the PORTA method is different than your understanding. My understanding of the PORTA method is that the FCC has provided that as a shorthand method to circumvent a lot of expensive cost studies or traffic studies to make it easier for two carriers to conduct business for the exchange of traffic. So the PORTA method says nothing about the location of the caller. It says nothing about the location of the termination point. It describes the point of exchange of traffic as the basis for determining whether a call ultimately is recorded as inter or intra-MTA.
Are you aware that NECA has petitioned the FCC for use of the telephone numbers or the SS7 method as being one that is best available to small rural LECs like the petitioners in this particular case?
I am aware of that petition, and I am aware of substantial opposition to it.
And one of the reasons why NECA has pushed for the SS7 method is that it essentially alleviates some of the burden that you're talking about that would be imposed upon Altel to measure its own traffic or to essentially conduct or agree upon what you've articulated to be an expensive cost study.
I won't speculate on the motivations of NECA, but I would assume there's other motivations at stake in their recommendation of that proposal.
And really, if we're talking about the ease of conducting a study, the study that's been advanced by the petitioners in this particular case, the telephone numbers or SF7 study, it's incumbent upon the petitioners to develop that study, which means that Altel does not have to extract CDRs or other data from its record, which it's indicated it doesn't have the ability to do so. Isn't that correct?
I think Mr. Thompson testified to the fact that the SS7 method did not require an analysis of CDRs, and I accept that.
And this is a method that would effectively be simple for the RLECs to conduct based upon Mr. Thompson's testimony, correct?
Well, it would be simple. It's not accurate. It's more accurate for some conditions than it is for others. and it only reflects traffic going in one direction.
And that's essentially, you mentioned accuracy, that's essentially why this is a factor, correct? It's not unusual to use factors in the telecommunications industry.
Oh, it's quite common, as I suggested, with the fact the balance of traffic factors are very common.
Sure, and what the parties do is use the best information that's available to them to develop that factor, correct?
Factors are developed in many different ways.
And one of those would be using actual data so that the ultimate factor has a relation to something in reality as opposed to pulling a number out of the air, correct?
Well, you know, my experience is this. My experience is that parties can, in fact, extract actual data in such a way that the actual data appears to be dramatically different data. And it puts them in a position of having to argue about whether that data is truly representative of what's going on or partially representative of what's going on. So what you would term as actual data is only part of the solution.
Well, and one of the things that NECA has advocated in its petition to the FCC is that numerous other CMRS carriers have agreed to utilize the SS7 or telephone numbers method for the development of inter-MTA factors. Do you disagree that there are other CMRS providers that have agreed to this?
I believe most CMRS providers have not agreed with that concept. In fact, CTIA opposes that concept. CTIA is the, in essence, the Cellular Telephone Industry Association lobbying branch.
Are you aware of a recent federal court case between Verizon and the South Dakota Public Utilities Commission that was pending in federal court in South Dakota?
The one I am aware of had to do with the application, I believe, of South Dakota, some South Dakota code to the rules that related to wireless traffic.
Sure. And in that particular case, are you aware that a representative authorized to speak on the part of Verizon actually indicated that they did not have an objection to using the telephone numbers method?
I haven't read the case.
So you don't have any reason to disagree with my statement then?
I'm going to object to calls. For him to speculate and guess, Ms. Moore's not a witness in this. If he doesn't know, it's
existing.
You also testified about the rate to be applied to the inter-MTA traffic, and if I recall correctly, what you indicated was there were no FCC rules that specifically spoke to inter-MTA traffic. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And isn't it fair to say, though, that the FCC certainly contemplated that there would be a distinction drawn between intra-MTA traffic and CMRS traffic?
They did, and they referenced that in the first a few paragraphs in the first report and order.
And they've actually discussed that since then in a 2003 rulemaking docket, correct?
I'm not aware of that.
With regard to the rate, you would agree with me that it's not uncommon in the industry where other carriers have agreed to use access rates to apply to inter-MTA traffic.
That's right. Carriers have agreed to any number of rates and rate structures in negotiated agreements.
And, in fact, the parties involved in this particular proceeding have in the past agreed to such treatment of the rates for inter-MTA traffic.
That's correct, in a 2003 negotiated agreement.
And when you talk about rates, I know there's been some discussion about Altel being compensated symmetrically for traffic, or that it be compensated through use of a net factor. I'd like to talk with you a little bit about that particular claim. Altel has no access rates, correct?
Altel is barred from filing for access rates.
Has no tariff been on file with the FCC?
No. Wireless operator.
And it has no switched access tariff on file with the South Dakota Public Utilities Commission?
That's correct.
Has Altel ever performed an interstate cost study?
Not with respect to its wireless business.
Has it ever performed an intrastate cost study?
Not with respect to its wireless business.
And in fact, when you look at some of the reasons for this, the retail end user pricing model that a wireless carrier uses is much different for a wireless carrier than it is for the Lex in this case, isn't it?
I'm not sure what the Lex in this case use.
And in fact, wireless carriers and CMRS carriers, I think you've already indicated, have never collected access charges, correct?
We've had sporadic collections of access charges, generally as a result of a voluntary or negotiated basis. And that's basically why, one of the reasons why we're here with this issue. The FCC, when they barred us from filing for access tariffs, did indicate that we did have right to compensation, and we were able to pursue that through other means, either through